Good day, I'm Jackie Judd with Health on the Hill. It's the start of a new year, and with it, we will soon see the start of final negotiations between the Senate and House over reforming the nation's health care system. Here to discuss what's ahead, Mary Agnes Carey of Kaiser Health News and Julie Rovner of National Public Radio. Welcome to you both, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Let's talk first. What are the major disputes that you expect to see thrashed out during these negotiations between the Senate and the House?
Well, the sizes of the bills are very different. The Senate passed a bill that's about $871 billion over the next decade. The House bill is over $1 trillion, so that'll be a point of discussion. There is no public option in the Senate bill, but it is in the House bill. Abortion's another key issue of dispute, much more restrictive language in the House bill than in the Senate bill, and also the way the bills are financed are very different. In the Senate, they would increase the Medicare payroll tax on some of the highest wage earners. They would place an excise tax on some of the highest cost health insurance plans. And in the House, they would put a tax on some of the highest wage earners. And here we're talking about individuals who make about $500,000 and couples who make more than $1 million. So the financing is another key area of dispute they're going to have to work out.
And the Senate Democrats have the upper hand in these negotiations, right?
Well, the Senate, it was sure tough to get their bill through,
right.
And it was awfully close.
So they don't have any wiggle room.
That's what they're saying. Now, you never know what can happen in negotiations and another round of votes, but that is certainly the message that's been sent out by, for example, Joseph Lieberman, who's an independent from Connecticut, and I think Ben Nelson of Nebraska has been sending the same kind of message. This is the bill I voted for in the Senate, and this is the bill that I've got to see from any House-Senate negotiations. And they say individually they don't have a lot of wiggle room, and that certainly is the thought with the Senate.
Your take on that?
Well, yeah. As you know, the Senate, of course, it takes 60 votes to break a filibuster. And obviously, any final, you know, conference report, you only need 51 votes to pass a conference report, but you need 60 votes to get that to the floor. So as every Democratic senator or the 58 Democrats and those two independents will say, every single one is the 60th vote. And any single member of that Democratic caucus can bring this process to a grinding halt. So you're going to have assent of that final bill by every single member of that caucus. So basically, you know, every single member is going to be de facto a conferee on this bill.
And Julie, walk us through procedurally how things will go over the next several weeks during these negotiations.
Well, I think everyone expects this to not be the traditional how a bill becomes a law conference process, where the House would appoint conferees and the Senate would appoint conferees and they would meet in a room and, you know, reporters would get to sit there and watch the negotiations go on, which almost never happens anymore anyway. I think everyone expects that what will probably happen is what's been happening more and more with these big bills anyway, which is that there will be an informal negotiation process. And frankly, that's already been going on since the basic outlines of this bill became fairly clear back, you know, early part of December. You've had House and Senate staff starting to meet, Democratic staff starting to thrash out what they call the underbrush, sort of the easier parts of these bills where most of the things were the same. And so you will get Democratic staff and pretty soon Democratic members sitting down together. In fact, in an interview with the NewsHour's Jim Lehrer, President Obama said he expects to have some of the Democrats down to the White House to do some of their negotiating. So actually, I think the president intends to be involved in maybe some of these more difficult negotiations over some of the issues that Mary Agnes was mentioning. And they would like to do this, obviously, as soon as possible. Democrats want to get on to these issues of jobs and the economy. Now we've got these new issues of terrorism that are on the agenda. There had been talk of perhaps getting this done by the President's State of the Union. That seems perhaps a little bit ambitious given how big these bills are and how many issues there are to resolve, but certainly they want to get it done by, you know, the beginning or middle of February.
Is it conceivable the president would hold off a State of the Union until there is a health care reform bill?
It's been muttered that that's a possibility if perhaps they're only a few days away from getting it done by very early February. I've heard that mentioned. But remember, the budget needs to come out the first Monday in February, or is it the first Tuesday? The budget needs to come out in early February. That is a statutory deadline, and generally the State of the Union happens before that. The president has leeway to deliver that State of the Union. It's usually one of those last weeks in January, but I think that could be rearranged slightly if it looks like this bill is getting very, very close at the very end of January or very early February.
Where does all of this leave Republicans? Without the formal conference committee and the procedural issues that go along with the committee, Are they completely sidelined?
Well, Mitch McConnell, who's the minority leader in the Senate, made it very clear when the Senate passed its bill that they would do everything they could to stop this bill. So I think they'll continue to talk about the elements they don't like. They'll continue to use any procedural weapon in their arsenal.
But will there be any procedural weapon that they can use?
Well, as I think Julie mentioned, that the difficulties in getting to the conference report, so they may be able to use some procedural motions there. Once they're on the report, I think as Julie discussed, it's a 51 vote. So that's where, before they getting that conference package to the floor, will be where they will try to use procedural motions, I think. That's what I would be looking for.
And, of course, it may not be, being as they probably won't use the traditional conference process, probably won't be a conference report. It will just be another iteration of the bill. But the same thing holds true. It will simply be a final bill will only take 51 votes, but there will still be some sort of way to get it to the floor that will need 60 votes. But going back to this question of the Republicans, you know, there are still a lot of Republicans who would like to have some input into what this bill says. At this point, it looks like it's certainly more likely than not that this bill is going to become law. And there are a lot of Republicans who care a lot about this issue who, frankly, you know, quietly.
So how do they weigh in?
Well, I was going to say, who rather quietly disagree with their leaders and would like to have some input into it. And I think perhaps, you know, may prefer this back channel way of doing it, might like to, you know, quietly. Certainly Max Baucus, the chairman of the Finance Committee, you know, still has quite the relationship with Chuck Grassley, the ranking Republican on his committee. And, you know, even though things have gotten rather nasty and testy on the floor and in public, I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see, you know, some perhaps suggestions made by some Republicans that might get incorporated into some iteration.
Are you thinking of anything in particular there?
Well, there have already been some things that have been, you know, that were put into this bill in the Finance Committee to try to get, you know, members like Olympia Snowe, who of course did vote for the bill at Finance Committee, did not on the floor. But, you know, you have to wonder if at the very end, as this bill is going to become law, if there aren't a few Republicans who might not want to say no to what may well be a historic vote. This is based on, you know, what may happen at the end. You know, obviously the leaderships have now made this a political line in the sand. They want the Democrats to own this issue. If things do not go well, if things go wrong, and certainly if these bills don't take effect in large part for several years, and the Republicans would like to hang that around the Democrats' neck. So the majority of Republicans are going to be happy, I think, to vote no on this. But there's certainly a lot of Republicans who've worked for many years on health issues who would like to have a say in this and who would like to really make what they now think is a bad bill better. So, I mean, there is something to say for Republicans having some input into what is in this final product.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. We will talk to you again next week. Thank you for joining us, Health on the Hill. I'm Jackie Judd.